The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Hello and greetings, friends. So today we continue exploring time and wise relationship with time in the Dharma. So many of us perhaps live with the feeling that time is chasing us, or that we're chasing in time. There's always another email, another task, another responsibility, text message, something else to optimize. And yet underneath all of this is another rhythm, is the rhythm of the breath, breathing. There's the rhythm of fatigue, renewal, the rhythm of the seasons, the rhythm of the living body. And today we'll explore some of the tensions between mechanical time and embodied time, which is particularly perhaps in Silicon Valley, where IMC is, Insight Meditation Center, Redwood City, and maybe actually I would say the Western world, or even more so the whole world. There's always been, as I mentioned earlier, in times of the Buddha, there's feeling of restlessness and accomplishment. And so this is, even though it's more acute in this zeitgeist, it's not unique to our zeitgeist, to the time we live in. And I want to draw again from the book I mentioned yesterday, Einstein's Dreams, which was an international bestseller I learned yesterday. I love my copy, by Alan Lightman. Lightman, L-I-G-H-T-M-A-N, who is both a physicist and a philosopher. So these stories, I draw a couple of stories from his book to elucidate a point. And there are two worlds. In one of the stories, he talks about two worlds. In one world, there's people live by mechanical time. So, in one world, there's mechanical time, and then there is the body time. The mechanical time is rigid and metallic. It's like a great iron pendulum swinging back and forth, the same, predetermined. And the body time is the other thing entirely. It squirms and wriggles, Lightman says, like a blue fish in a bay. It makes up its mind as it goes along. And the people in this world split into two kinds. Some are convinced that mechanical time barely exists. They pass by the giant clock in the square, and they don't even see it. They wear watches only as ornaments, as courtesies to whoever gave them the gift of the watch. They eat when they're hungry. They go to work when they wake. They laugh at the idea of mechanical time because they know and they can feel that time moves in fits and starts. That an hour rushing her child to the hospital is not the same length as an hour in the sun. And then in this world, there are also others who behave as though their bodies barely exist. They rise at 7 precisely. They lunch at noon precisely. When their stomach growls, they check the watch to see whether it's time to be hungry. When they begin to lose themselves in a piece of music, they glance at the clock above the stage to see when it will be time to go home. For them, the body is a machine, levers and forces and chemicals, a thing to be ordered, not obeyed. So here, Lightman has his thumb a little on the scale. You can feel him gently ridiculing the clock people. And I noticed that pull in myself too. Of course, there's something romantic about the bluefish, this rhythm of swimming and finding our own rhythm. The one who, the live one, the bluefish, the live one who eats when they're hungry and sits when they're moved to. But I want to resist this easy version, because the easy version isn't wisdom either. It's just a preference dressed up as wisdom. I think the real teaching here is isn't just be a body time person. It's not that. But the real teaching, the real wisdom here is that there are two times and both are true. And we need to know which one we tend towards. And this is the practice, to really become aware of which one we tend towards and skillfully work with both. And I think the Dharma models this quite beautifully and very concretely and in how we practice and how we teach actually the practice itself. I'll give you an example. So when we teach retreats, or I teach retreats, I'll speak personally, especially when beginners come on silent meditation retreats, say at IRC Inside Retreat Center, I tell them something that perhaps sounds like a contradiction. I tell them that first, give yourself to the schedule of the retreat. And the schedule of the retreat, if you've ever been on a silent retreat, is starts early in the morning, sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, eat somewhere, sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, right? 45-minute segments, and it's very regimented. So I tell them, give yourself to the schedule. Just the schedule says, okay, sit, you go to the hall and sit. The schedule says walk, you walk. So you don't have to decide, there's not this confusion, or do I do this? Do I do that? And and then in the same breath, I invite folks, and if you're genuinely tired, take a nap in the afternoon, listen to your body, and see what your body needs. If you need to sit outside, if the heart needs some space, sit outside. And sometimes people say, wait, which is it? Do I give myself the schedule, or do I listen to my body and take a nap if I'm exhausted? Well, the answer is both. You do both completely. You give yourself the schedule and you listen to your body. And there's enormous wisdom in each. And the skill isn't choosing one forever. The skill is knowing, the wisdom is knowing in each moment which one is the medicine. So the thing is that the medicine depends on the patient, and you're both the patient and the one holding the cabinet door, the medicine cabinet, you're holding it open. So the real wisdom is the honest self-knowledge about what is my tendency. And sometimes also discernment is tough. What's the right thing? Just choose one. You will know soon enough. If you've veered into one direction, you'll be, if you've given yourself too much to the schedule, you'll be exhausted, and you'll learn, oh yeah, that was the more appropriate thing to do. So sometimes wisdom is not in the moment arising, but afterwards when we look back and see, having chosen, say, body time would have been wiser, or I did have some space, or giving myself to the schedule would have been wiser. And it's okay for the wisdom to then learn from what already occurred and then move forward. And another thing I want to bring in is to to notice if you're a clock time type when it comes to meditation, if you're disciplined, and you aren't the cushion, you know, at 5 a.m. every morning. Well, this is at 7, but anyway, and no matter what, and notice, notice if you start to become tight, too tight about practice, and the practice starts to lose its joy, lose its freshness. You do it out of a grim duty and not practicing because you love it, because you enjoy it. And also on the other hand, I want to balance it. If you notice that you're too much of a body time type and you only sit whenever you're moved, you practice whenever you're inspired, and then the failure mode becomes, oh, whenever I feel like it. When I feel like it, quietly becomes almost never. And if the inspiration doesn't come, a month can go by and the cushion gets dusty. And so if we just let ourselves be natural and be natural and moved by inspiration, then we can simply drift. So pushing the edge a little gently with structure, setting at a time, even when unmotivated. And I hear that, and given that this is the 7 a.m. Sangha, you show up at 7 a.m., you know, even if you're unmotivated. So this is beautiful. And yet, notice if there's too much discipline and you're sitting because you should. And then aversion builds quietly under the discipline, until you don't like your practice anymore. And you're just an employee of your practice, as if you're a time card, you're checking in and out. Yep, sat for 30 minutes. Yep, showed up. And yet there is no love. There's no heart. So I'll say something very heretical as a Dharma teacher. If that becomes your modus operandi with practice, then stop practice. Stop sitting for a while. And I've told that actually, given that instruction to some of my students who were just sitting and they had lost. They were just doing sitting out of grim duty and they were not loving. There wasn't heart. So I invited them to stop sitting for a while. And this student of mine, for example, started to miss sitting, started to develop this love. Like, I miss sitting. Like, okay, now, all right, now you can go back to sitting. This is great. Instead of it letting it be, just falling into a grim duty. So having wisdom, really having wisdom about body time and mechanical time can really support us. The wisdom, not just in practice. The examples I gave with sitting are examples in the Dharma, very helpful examples, I hope, but also about life. What else is there about life that you're doing as mechanically? And the body time, the heart has lost its touch. So with that, that brings us to the end of our mechanical time for this Dharmet. Yeah, I look forward to continuing these series in time tomorrow. Still more to share and practice together. Thanks, everyone. Take good care.